You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. On Tuesday, America's Test Kitchen host Chris Kimball is coming to the Riverside Theater in Milwaukee to give the audience a behind-the-scenes look at the Test Kitchen.
He joins us on this Food Friday for a preview of that live show and to share some of his favorite fall recipes just in time for Halloween.
We're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have for Chris Kimball of America's Test Kitchen? What cooking processes do you want to ask about? And how did America's Test Kitchen help teach you how to cook? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Chris, welcome back to Central Time.
My pleasure.
So America's Test Kitchen is going to be live at the Riverside Theater next Tuesday. What is your live show going to be like?
Well, when I started doing this 18 months ago, I was told, because I hired a director briefly, and they said he said that the audience would be really interested in hearing about me. And I said, I don't really think so. And so we did the first show, and I was right and he was wrong. I took about half the show out the first 2 weeks.
So no one wants to hear about you.
Well, the audience wants to hear about the audience. I mean, the audience wants to participate. They want to ask questions. I make fun of the audience a little bit. They make fun of me. There's a lot of back and forth. We get the people up on the stage. We do a culinary quiz. We do a taste test. Some poor person has to dress up in a Velcro suit and launch themselves in a wall. Don't ask. But it's really about home cooking and all the silly things we do at home and all the silly things we do in the test kitchen. So, you know, we kind of make fun of ourselves, and that makes it a more fun evening for everybody.
What kind of silly things do we do at home that you either need to train us out of or keep in mind when you're, say, putting a recipe out there for us?
Well, yeah, I mean, putting a recipe out there is like, you know, I have four kids. It's like kids getting out of college. You know, they go out into the world and you just pray and hope for the best. I mean, that's basically the same thing. Well, I mean, people don't read the bloody recipe. They don't have all the ingredients. I mean, some of my favorite comments are, you know, they're making a Greek dish and the person says, you know, lamb would have really made that dish, but it was a lamb dish. They used beef, you know. Yes, no, in fact, that is the dish. Or the gentleman who substituted shrimp for chicken, you know, and said it was really tough and dry. Well, you cook shrimp for half an hour, that kind of what happened. So, you know, people throw in cream of mushroom soup instead of cream. People don't really follow recipes. So if you're going to create a recipe in a test kitchen, that's great. I mean, fine, but then what? So you have to kind of figure out what they're going to do with it, and that's the harder part.
And in terms of other stuff that home cooks do, and one of the places you zero in on is what we actually have in our kitchen. What do we have in our kitchen that maybe we shouldn't be using, or what should we definitely try to have to cook better meals?
Well, you don't need a lot of stuff. I mean, what you need is a really good 8-inch chef's knife that's sharp. Victorinox, fortunate Victorinox, Fibrox knife is $40. Great knife, great handle. You need a knife sharpener. You can, for $12, buy an AccuSharp, which is a little manual sharpener, which does a pretty good job. You need a good 12-inch skillet, not nonstick, a regular one. All Clyde makes a good one, of course. They're expensive, but they're good. You need an 8-inch nonstick. You need a 3 or 4 quart saucepan. You need a Dutch oven, you know, and a cutting board that you can throw in the dishwasher. Instant read thermometer is great. ThermoPen makes an expensive one we love. It's almost $100, but there are others. And a timer. You know, those are sort of the basics. You don't need the sous vide. You know, you don't absolutely need a standing mixer. You can get away without it. You know, you don't need necessarily a pressure cooker, although they do some wonderful things. So I think the more you cook, the less stuff you use, probably.
Now, cooking live, do you get that instant feedback that you don't get when you just put out a recipe in a cookbook or a magazine? Is that part of the fun of doing a live show?
Well, we don't really cook recipes, because if you've ever seen a show where they cook recipes, you kind of want to go out in the alley for a smoke and then come back because it's kind of boring.
Still simmering.
I mean, cooking in real time is really boring, I can assure you. That's why TV shows are not in real time. You know, we've compressed the whole thing. So I think what people want to know about is how you do it. And we have two of my favorite videos of all time. One is me trying to burn down the Today Show set, and one is my editorial director trying to do a Bush to Noel with chocolate frosting that had been sitting in the refrigerator for 2 hours, and it was pretty much a train wreck. So, I mean, that's fun, you know. But real cooking, you know, is just not – you can't stand on stage and really cook in real time. You know, this is, has to be entertainment. And you can't go more than a minute or so without something fun happening, you know, because people are – they pay good money, and you have to give them some energy. You have to give them something to look at, and so we pack as much as we can into those 2 hours.
We're talking to Chris Kimball right now of America's Test Kitchen and Cook's Illustrated Magazine, talking about his upcoming appearance at the Riverside Theater in Milwaukee next Tuesday and what it's like to cook in the home and for people who are going to be trying these recipes. Chris, you just listed a couple of kind of disasters, including cold frosting. Do you still have epic fails in the kitchen, or are you so good at this that it doesn't happen very much anymore and it's a rarity?
No, I think I actually went to make a cake. It was a like a quick bread, and I think I actually left the flour out. So, yeah, no, I figured it out before I put it in the oven. But, you know, no, I make mistakes all the time. And so I think the more you cook, the more you know how to fix the mistakes, or you recover from it more quickly. Most of the time I don't, but I get busy, the phone rings, something happens, I skip an ingredient. Skipping an ingredient happens all the time with people, right? I mean,
yeah,
you have 10 or 15 ingredients in a recipe, you know, sometimes you overlook one. Hopefully it's not the baking powder. But then you put something in an oven, it doesn't rise properly, and you have to figure out what to do. If you've seen that happen 30 times, then you have a better chance of fixing it than if you haven't. I think most things are fixable, especially top-of-the-stove cooking. I mean, you can fix almost anything, and just don't panic. So, yeah, I still make mistakes, sure.
Well, Chris, our phone rang while you were talking there, and we have Pat on the line now in Duluth, Minnesota, I think looking for some advice. Pat, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, and we love your show both on the TV and the radio. And my question is this. I don't want to use canned beans as much anymore. I'd like to just use dried ones and cook them up. And right now what's happening, I soak them overnight, and too often I'm getting some that are cooked, but then others that are kind of, they're still dryish. And I'm wondering why that's happening, and it's even happened to me with split yellow peas.
Any advice, Chris, on
that? Yeah, the question is where you buy them from. There are places to get them online where they're pretty fresh. I mean, they haven't been sitting around for years. I think part of the problem is some of these are so old. They're so dehydrated. And the other thing is when you soak them, sometimes some of them float to the top, and you can probably get rid of those. I would put some salt in the water as well and soak them overnight, which is really helpful because it tenderizes them a little bit so they absorb water better. But it's usually where you're buying them, because a lot of those beans have been sitting around a long time. So there are some places online that sell them, and I have much better luck with them. You know, a lot of places in the world, like Spain, they actually eat the beans green before they're dried, and they have lots of recipes for stews and things like that. But it's where you buy them. Make sure you salt the water and then discard the ones that float to the top if they're still sitting there.
All right. Good luck, Pat. Hope that helps. Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234.
And, Chris, one of the things that surprised me is something that surprised you as well. I read that you said one of the big eye-openers was that searing meat does not sear in the juices. So why does everyone think that it does?
Well, because everyone's been repeating this nonsense for 150 years, even some very famous cooks. What happens is when meat starts to rise, the internal temperature gets about 110, and two things happen. The meat fibers start to shrink in their length and then in the diameter. And when they shrink around the diameter, it's like squeezing a sponge. Liquid, you know, water essentially comes out. And so that process accelerates. And so at 140 or 150 or 160 internal for beef, for example, you're going to lose a lot of liquid. And it doesn't matter if you've that has nothing to do with what happens to the outside of the steak or the roast. It's not like the outside of the steak or roast is perfectly flat. And somehow by searing it, you've turned it into an impermeable barrier. It's inside. What's going on is that liquid is being pushed out of the meat fibers, between the meat fibers. So searing adds flavor, but searing does absolutely nothing to keep anything inside the meat. It's all about internal temperature. As a matter of fact, you could roast or you could boil meat. And if you boiled a roast to 125 versus roasted it, it would have the same amount of juiciness. It wouldn't affect what's going on inside at all.
We're talking to Chris Kimball from America's Test Kitchen and Cook's Illustrated Magazine. He's coming to the Riverside Theater in Milwaukee next Tuesday. He's with us sharing favorite cooking tips, and we've got a recipe coming up, too.
And we want to hear your favorite cooking tips now at 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. What questions do you have for Chris about home cooking? What advice do you have for cooking at home? And what advice do you have for someone who's just learning how to cook now? You can call in with your questions, your lingering food mysteries at 800-642-1234. And you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're picking up our conversation now with Chris Kimball of America's Test Kitchen and Cook's Illustrated Magazine. He's giving us a preview of his live show in Milwaukee on Tuesday, and he's sharing some of his favorite fall recipes.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question, some advice you need from Chris? Call now at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. And Chris, we mentioned recipes. You sent us, and we've got this on the Central Time Facebook page, a recipe for beef burgundy. We don't need to talk through all the details, but what's the key? What makes this recipe work?
Well, the thing that's annoying about a recipe like this is you have to do a lot of sauteing, you know. And so we took a really hot oven, a little salt pork, some beef scraps, rendered them in a pan, and then reduced the oven down to lower, 325. And then we essentially put all of the vegetables in the meat on the pan and cooked it. So you end up doing this in the oven, and you don't have that problem of multiple batches of browning. Because most French cooking, Northern European cooking, is based upon sautéing the heat. And it's just very time-consuming. So this way the oven does almost all the work, and you get some additional flavor from that salt pork in the oven as well. So it's just a really easy way of doing what is usually a pretty complicated recipe.
Right, and that recipe is up right now on the Central Time Facebook page.
And Chris, I just want to make sure, I want to do this, but I want to substitute tofu for the beef and like mead for the wine. I can just use the exact recipe, right? I'm just messing with you.
There are no words to describe what I would think about substituting tofu. I mean, I like tofu in its place, but not in beef burgundy. Not as a meat substitute, please. Thank you very much.
Maybe seitan would be a fair substitute.
If I try this, I'll try
tried that
deal.
Too. Yeah. Right. You know, I mean, just go have an apple, please.
All right, let's go to our callers now. We have Karen joining us in Madison. Karen, hi.
Hi. So thanks for taking my call, and
sure.
Thank you for you and your staff for inspiring and demystifying some things. I've got a question about using copper cookware. I don't know when to and when not to use it. It seems like it's used a lot when you're whisking eggs, but I don't know why. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Karen.
It's a good question. Yes, copper bowls, unlined copper bowls, were used for whisking egg whites. It helped to denature and stabilize the foam, and that actually is true. But any standing mixer or electric mixer is fine. If you put a little cream of tartar, like a quarter teaspoon, and a tablespoon or two of sugar in with the whites, they stabilize the foam just fine, so you don't need to use copper. Copper pans that are lined usually with tin and now stainless steel are fine. Copper conducts heat very well. But, you know, they're expensive, and you have to keep the outside shiny. And so any multi-ply pan. Usually it's stainless steel on the outside, and the sandwich inside of aluminum is just fine. So you don't really need to use copper. It's nice looking, but you can do with the, you know, all-clad style pans fine.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Chris, it's fall, a lot of good stuff out there. What are some of your favorite things to make this time of year?
Well, I cook more simply now, and I like soups and stews, but doing them a little more easily. For example, I make a lamb soup, which is just take a pound of lamb and some water, 7 or 8 cups of water, simmer it for 10 or 15 minutes, skim off the top, and then you start adding some beans that you've soaked and some other ingredients, some onions you saute with some cumin, and finally some potatoes. I mean, just very simple one-pot meals. I don't cook, you know, meat and three veg anymore. I tend to make a one-pot thing, maybe with a salad. I think it's not how many things you make, it's which things you make. So I like one pot. I love slow cooker. It forces you to be organized and get things done early in the day, which I like. Matter of fact, we do have a beef burgundy recipe in a slow cooker, which is terrific. I do like that a lot. So I like stews. I like soups. I like things you can just sit in the oven all day. I love pot au feu, which is just beef, which is usually brisket, simmered in water for 3 hours till it's tender and cooked. And then you take the beef out and you simmer some vegetables in it, and you're done. I mean, finished. That's probably my easiest favorite meal of all time.
It's apple season right now, and a lot of people are cooking with apples. Do you have a favorite variety of apple that you think produces the best results for stuff like apple crisp and apple pie?
Well, if you do have availability of lots of kinds, I love Macowans, I love Cortlands, I love Rhode Island Greenings. If you don't, usually if you can take half Max and half Grannies. Grannies hold their shape, Max cooked down but have good flavor. That's a good 50-50 combination that always works. In the quote-unquote old days, people would use 4, 5, or 6 different types of apples in their pies, which I think is nice because some apples are spicy, some are really sweet. I do find a lot of the newer, you know, Fuji, Gala, some of the newer ones, are a little too sweet for me. You know, I like them a little tartar. Northern Spy was originally called Northern Pie for a pie apple. They're very good. My advice would be just to get a bunch of different kinds and mix them up. Just try different apples because every apple's different, and no apple pie or crisp comes out exactly the same way every time anyway.
Talking to Chris Kimball from America's Test Kitchen. Back to our callers now with Ann in Kenosha. Ann, hi.
Hi. My husband and I are actually coming up to the show next week.
Okay.
So we're very excited. My question was, since the British baking show has become so popular here, I'd love to see some of those technical challenge recipes tackled by the test kitchen. You know, explain how to do them, you know, so maybe American cooks could make some of those recipes they've been watching.
And thanks
so that's
for
a great
that.
Show, by the way. I really like that show, and it's a really interesting concept. They do a terrific job. Yeah, that's a good idea. We talked about that. That's really my favorite new show in the last few years. It's terrific.
Well, thanks so much for that. And, Chris, any surprises that we should look for? I guess they won't be surprises if you tell us, but what should people look forward to when they come to the show?
Well, I think, you know... We bite back. I mean, we do have a lot of questions from the audience. And when you first come in, you're asked to submit a question. We collect them all right before the show. So 10 minutes before the show, I have like 150 questions. So I pick a bunch out to answer in the show. We do a Q&A towards the end of the show. And so there's just a lot of back and forth and in audience participation. So, you know, it's about visiting with the audience visiting with me and us, and it's that back and forth that really makes the show. I did one in Philadelphia last week, and we have a culinary quiz, you know, 10 questions, and you have to hit the buzzer and everything else. Well, the person who lost was really unhappy they lost, And I think they almost got into a fist fight with the winner. So, you know, that's the kind of thing I love, because there's a lot of spontaneity. I mean, not the fist fight, but the, you know, it got kind of tense there at the end. So, yeah, that's what I like. I like the unexpected, and sometimes things don't go just the way they're supposed to, and that's the fun part. That's what I look forward to.
Thanks a lot for joining us today, Chris.
My pleasure.
That's Chris Kimble, host of the public television and public radio show America's Test Kitchen. He was with us to talk about his appearance at the Riverside Theater in Milwaukee on Tuesday. Check the Central Time Facebook page for event info and a recipe for beef burgundy.